Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, the coolest place on the web. When the strange becomes reality, when the light becomes dark, when you open your eyes and the monsters are still there, that's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, Taps Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another night of Taps Family Radio. Here we are, Tuesday evening. It is the 28th day of June. Where has June gone already? My goodness, I cannot believe we are getting ready to head into a holiday weekend. And before we get too far into it right now, let's wish a early happy holidays to both our Canadian and our American listeners. Of course, Friday will be Canada Day, where Canada shoots off their fireworks and celebrates their independence. And then on Sunday will be the 4th. Is it Sunday or Monday?
Monday, 4th of July.
Silly me. On Monday will be the 4th of July. That's when we crazy Americans get to fire off our fireworks and celebrate our independence. So always a big weekend. And myself, I luck out. First of all, let's introduce ourselves. Tim Ellis with me, the lovely Chris Perkins. This is Taps Family Radio. Good evening, Chris. Thanks for being here.
Oh, you know, I'm just here for the ride. Go right ahead.
Well, buckle up. It's a bumpy ride. But I kind of luck out where I live in northern Michigan. I am right on the border of Canada. I mean, literally, I live in a town called Sault Ste. Marie. There's a bridge about a mile and a half that separates us from Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. We're sister cities. And living where we live, I get to celebrate both fireworks because the Sault, Ontario will light off their fireworks Friday night, and we all go down to the river, watch them, have fun, hoot and holler, and then Monday we'll go back down and watch the American one. So I always love this weekend coming up. So happy Canada Day and happy 4th of July to everyone. What do you got? You got big 4th of July plans?
I was thinking when you said that, it really didn't matter if it was the 3rd or Monday or Sunday, because generally we all start with Saturday and kind of celebrate all weekend anyway.
Atta girl.
You know, there's several little local carnivals, and I kind of enjoy those better than the big things anyway, the little hometown things and fireworks, barbecues, that kind of thing. We're just going to kind of take it easy.
Very cool. Well, whatever, for our listeners out there, whatever your plans are this coming weekend, have a great time, but please be safe. Oh, man, do we have something cool to talk about right now that I am so excited about, mainly because it's beyond my comprehension.
Oh, I know.
how this stuff is done, how it's created. But you've probably heard us always talk about our phenomenal producer, Cormac Strain.
Yay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this guy doesn't get near enough pomp and circumstances he deserves. I mean, he does so much behind the scenes for us, and he works on the fly and just keeps the show moving even when there's bumps in the road. And he went ahead and in his extremely almost mad scientist-like brain was able to create for us. We now have an iPhone app for Taps Family Radio, and it's also out there now testing for the Android app. So if you're an iPhone or an Android owner, all you got to do is go to our website, tapsfamilyradio.net. And right on the right-hand side, you will see a link to download for the iPhone. Now, the iPhone one we know works great. That one's been out for about a week now, and we've had people email us back and tell us it's working fantastic. Sounds like if you have an older version of the iPhone, I think is what Cormac was saying earlier today, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, if you have an older version of the iPhone, it might have some issues using the app. But Cormac, as always, is already working on that to try to get something that'll work for the older iPhones. But you can download it for free from tapsfamilyradio.net. And the Android one, we are testing as we speak. So if you are an Android user, please go to tapsfamilyradio.net and download the app. And then there's a link right there. You can email us and let us know if you're having any issues or how it's working. How modern day is that?
I feel very modern. I just think that how many other radio shows have that? We're just very cool, I think. It makes us, it increases our cool factor way up there. People have no excuse now. We are mobile. And then another thing that I noticed on the test version of the Android one is the chat room's even there.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So people can listen, participate, see the chat room. There's just no excuse, guys. You can catch us now anywhere.
Anywhere and everywhere. Now, sadly, I'm a CrackBerry user. I've got the BlackBerry. So I do not have an iPhone or an Android, so I have not been able to use these myself. But I got some friends who are iPhone users, and they've already used it and absolutely love it.
Well, and Cormac is correcting me. The chat room is not on the iPhone because it doesn't use Flash. So Android users, you get that little bonus there.
Okay, very good. So we're just setting the record straight. We're all getting used to this ourselves. So no chat room on the iPhone, but it is on the Android.
That's right.
Okay, very cool.
Very good news.
Do you use either of those?
I have an Android phone.
I'm
Droid. I love my Android phone, and it's my second one. So I was testing out the app earlier today, and it was awesome. I could go straight to the archives and listen to the podcasts from the previous shows. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's just phenomenal. I have no idea. I'm lucky to get my browser open and go around the internet, and even my phone. And for him to come up with this app, I'm just amazed. Very impressed. Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's how the app works. During our live show, such as right now, you can open up the app and listen to the live show. You can also download and listen to any of our archive shows anytime you want. When we're not on a live show and when you are not listening to an archive Taps Family Radio segment, you can then be listening to Jackalope Radio, which is the home of Taps Family Radio. And let me tell you, if you've never been to Jackalope Radio's website, they have some phenomenal shows on there. What I love about Jackalope Radio is they've got a little bit of something for everyone who loves the paranormal and the strange and the weird and the fun stuff like that. They've got a show for everyone on there.
It's pretty diverse. It's a great list of shows. So you can't go wrong with either of these apps. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So again, go to tapsfamilyradio.net. If you're listening live right now, we want you to go there anyway because that you can join us in our chat room. And while you're there, if you've got the iPhone or the Droid, download. If you're listening on one of our podcasts and you've got those phones, head on over to our website right now at tapsfamilyradio.net and get yourselves signed up. As a matter of fact, I've been so excited looking at the homepage where the iPhone and the Droid app are. I forgot to get into the chat room, so I'm heading to the chat room right now. And while you're in the chat room with us, of course, that is your chance to ask any questions. If you have a question for Chris or myself or any of our guests coming up this evening, you can ask them right in the chat room. So we try to make it as easy as we can.
They're very good, too, about getting the questions to us. So by all means, get a hold of one of the staff members in there with the orange or the white icons and let them know you have a question, and they'll be sure to get it to us.
Yes. I've got a purple dude. I don't know what purple means, but I'm purple.
It just means you're special.
Okay. I'm special.
You're special.
Thank you, I think. So, Chris, you had a busy weekend. Last week, something pretty cool going on with the Taps family. I know you don't want to say it too much right now, but how did the Taps family reunion go?
It was awesome. I know this was first mentioned by Jason when we interviewed him like in January, mm-hmm. that the Taps family was going to have a reunion, have a get together to pull our teams together just to hang out and network for a weekend. And we did that. And I can't tell you how impressed I am with how well it went. I will go into it more with our Taps family spotlight team because she was there. But I'm telling you, it was everything we wanted it to be. We missed you. You need to be sure you make the next one, and our producer Cormac too. But wow, you know, I'll go into it more, but it was phenomenal.
Very cool. Yeah, we're going to have our Taps family segment. Like you said, Marie will be on with us. And I plan on just sitting back and listening to you tell the stories because I can't wait to hear about it. I was really bummed I couldn't make it. So I can't wait to hear the stories told by you and Marie. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure there's some that you probably won't even share.
Oh, yeah. There are some that we will keep to ourselves.
It wouldn't be a weekend if it wasn't.
That's
all right. Let's go ahead and let's mosey on over to some strange news right now. One of my favorite parts of the show. I always love to hear the strange and the mysterious out there. And let's go ahead, as always, ladies first. Chris, what do you got on the strange news side of things?
Well, I thought this was pretty interesting, and I believe this was sometime last week. There was a team in Fresno, California, paranormal team, the Sanger Paranormal Society, that held a press conference, and they were asking the public to help them raise funds to have quote-unquote Bigfoot residue tested for DNA. Now, how they know it's Bigfoot residue, I don't know, but what they said was they had a vehicle that was parked, and when they came back to the vehicle, there were smears on the windows, and one of them looked like a big paw print. They thought maybe they had some hair there. So they've called some people in. They've called a former law enforcement agent, actually, who is a forensic law enforcement agent. They called him in, and they've collected DNA samples. And now they're just kind of, I guess it's very pricey. So they're trying to get some help for this testing. You know, the thing about it is, it's not like they've got Bigfoot DNA somewhere to compare it to. So what they're really going to have to do here is rule out, you know, all of the known DNA matches, you know, bears and all those things. And then if anything's, you know, if it's still there and they can't explain it, then maybe they have something. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what comes of this.
Well, that's got me a little excited, because over the weekend I was out at a cabin out on Lake Superior, kind of off into the woods. And at one point, my cooler with my beverages was in the back of my truck in the tailgate, and I was down on the beach. I came back to grab a beverage, and as I came back, mysteriously, and this is the truth, there was a smiley face drawn on the dust of the side of my truck. Could that be Bigfoot?
Well, it's a happy Bigfoot.
It sure is, but I'm just saying, it seems to hold as much credence as these folks have, so maybe I'll send mine in for a check, too.
Well, I tell you what, if there's going to be a Bigfoot messing with my car, I'd be happy if it's one that just left happy faces.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about this one. Let's head on over to China. Man, this one was cool. And for anyone listening to the show, I'm telling you, Google these pictures, because they're pretty, I mean, amazing. I almost don't believe what I'm looking at. A ghostly apparition of an entire city has appeared over a Chinese river. Now, some are saying it's just a mirage, but others are saying it's just too much detail, and these pictures show too much detail for me to think it's a mirage. Now, residents in a Chinese city have been stunned after this giant mirage of a ghost city towered across the skyline. The apparition appeared earlier this month after a heavy rainfall and humid conditions along the Xinan River, which is it's on the eastern part of China. Tall buildings, mountains, and trees appeared to rise up through the ghostly mist that had descended over the river at dusk. Now, keep in mind, there's usually nothing there. It's usually open water and just skyline across the horizon. Everyone, tourists, motorists, people driving by, saw this city almost sitting on a cloud out on the river. Pictures and video have been taken of this, and they're out there on the net. You got to go check this out.
You know, we need to throw a link to those pictures up on our Facebook page. We'll have to get on that.
I'll make sure I get the stuff over to Larry. He can get that up for us.
Yeah, because that, I mean, it's interesting that it's in a place where there are no structures.
Right, so. Exactly. And that's why I say, you know, I mean, a mirage basically is where one part, the water is cooler or something. There's two different temperatures hitting each other, and then the light hits it and bends, and it almost looks like maybe there might be a figure or something there. That's what people in the desert see. But this is beyond just light bending. I mean, this is too graphic to be a mirage, in my opinion, once you see these pictures. So, yeah, in the meantime, Google them, and we'll make sure we get a link to these up on our website and our Facebook page as well.
You know, that's something interesting to throw at those multiverse people talking about parallel universes and things.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. All right. Second story for you there, ma'am.
Well, give me a minute and just bear with me. Okay. Listen really closely. Is that irritating? I mean, wouldn't that be irritating?
After a while.
After a while,
that would
be irritating to do for a while. But there is, unfortunately, a whole entire town in the UK that's dealing with a strange hum. And everybody hears it. it's happening to the point that when they're trying to sleep, they're not able to sleep. Their beds are vibrating, and they said not in a good way. So it's driving them all crazy. They said that there's no like mechanical reason for it. There aren't any factories or anything nearby. There's nothing really to explain it. But that the whole town is complaining of headaches, fatigue, lack of sleep. Their pets are unhappy. They're not able to rest, and they're just not happy. It's a deep vibration. It says that the whole town hears it, and it's kind of similar to the throb of a car engine. It happens all night, every night, and it's so far it's unexplained. It's not the first time this has happened. Apparently there were other cities in the 70s or somewhere like that. It's somewhere in the article that I'll have to post that on our Facebook page too, but somewhere else in the 70s the same type of situation happened and also went unexplained. So these poor people, I hope there's an end in sight for them, but for right now they're just going to have to deal with that annoying hum.
Wow, that's that, did they say if the animals are acting strange? Anything in there about like the birds flying weird, or if the dogs are freaking out? Anything about the animals?
All they really said is that the pets are restless. Their animals are restless. I'm sure there are other articles that might go into it a little more deeply, but right now it's just saying that the pets are restless and that everybody's getting really cranky. Can you imagine an entire town of people that aren't sleeping well? It's not a good situation.
I'd lock my door and stay inside for a while.
No joke.
All right. Well, let's finish up our strange news segment here with one that I think a lot of people are going to be able to maybe appreciate and at least associate with. This is over. This came from the BBC, so this is happening over in England. A professional clown who is part of a carnival, part of a circus, is offering classes to adults who have the fear of clowns.
Oh.
Yes. Actually, they call it chlorophobia. chlorophobia, fear of masks in disguise is actually the one they're saying, but also the fear of clowns as well. And the clown, Paul Carpenter, he performs as Popple the clown, is offering as their circus travels, he sends out advertisements ahead of time to these towns and lets adults know, hey, when we come in, I will sit down with you. And how he does this in stages. He first introduces himself, meets with the people out of his clown suit, and then he'll have another meeting, start dressing himself each meeting a little bit more as the clown. And then he says, as kind of a graduation, he brings the people, the night of the circus, he brings the people from his classes out into the big top with them and shows that they have overcome their fear of clowns. I thought that was kind of strange.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm sitting there hearing that and I'm thinking, well, that can't be too scary. But if somebody offered me a class to get over my fear of spiders, there's no way I'd go. I would not go. So I have to think it's kind of similar for people afraid of clowns.
Yeah, I would agree with you. To this day, as a grown adult, you know, and I know, I also have by far a full blown form of arachnophobia. I thank my mom to it. I know how I got it. It's because my mom had it, and as a kid, I grew up listening to her scream bloody murder every time the smallest spider in the world came walking through the house. And so, to this day, I can't do spiders either. So
I'm with you there.
Yeah, we've got that in common, girl. All right. Cormac, our producer, says he hates trees. Seriously, dude?
Trees? What's nobody hates trees.
He says, yeah. How can you hate trees? They're like beautiful. They give us oxygen.
Right.
I don't know. Them Irish. You never know.
Well, he's brilliant, but he hates trees. That's okay. That's we right. can deal with that.
Well, the most brilliant minds usually have weird things like that.
Some
so
quirkiness about them. Thing.
Before we sign off for our first commercial break here real quick, I want to remind everyone immediately following our show tonight, Paranormal Community Radio, which one of the co-hosts is our booking agent, if you will, for our guests, Larry. Larry and Tom co-host Paranormal Community Radio. They've got a great guest, Larry Flaxman, on their show tonight, and that will be at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you can find that at paracomradio.com. So we want to, and we'll remind people a few times throughout the show tonight that Larry's show comes on after Taps Family Radio. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have got our Taps Family segment coming up. A great guest. We've had her on before. We love having her on because she loves to talk in a good way. And Chris and Marie Cuff is going to be on with us. And Chris and Marie are going to talk a bit about the Taps Family get-together as well. We've got more coming up. Jackalope Radio, this is Taps Family Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, where ghost stories come to life. The Taps family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud Taps family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.com. co.uk. You're listening to Taps Family Radio. It just doesn't get any cooler than this.
When you hear strange noises in the night, when unexplained shadows move through the halls, when you feel there's nowhere you can turn, we're here to help. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. We're a proud Taps Family member, with chapters in Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Our dedicated team of investigators is ready to assist you. With professionalism and the utmost discretion, we'll help you understand what you've been experiencing. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. Because at times like this, you don't simply need proof. You need answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.spars-paranormal.com.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Taps Family Radio. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you on this Tuesday evening on our home, Jackalope Radio. And again, we ask everyone to come on over and join us at tapsfamilyradio.net. That is our official website where you can find out all about us and also get into our chat room, which is, if you're listening live, come on in. If you're not listening live and you're listening to it on the downloads, you can still come on over to tapsfamilyradio.net and join us in our chat room 24/7. And while you're there, make sure to download either the brand new iPhone app or the Droid app now, which we are now testing, so you can take Taps Family Radio along with you anywhere, anytime. All right. It's always my honor and pleasure to, at this point, kind of hand things over to Chris Perkins, because this is our Taps Family segment where we highlight one of our great Taps Family members and teams out there in the world. And as the manager, as the mama bird of all of us here, Chris, go ahead and let's find out who our guest is this evening.
I don't think I've ever been referred to that way. That was kind of cool.
As a mama bird?
A mama bird. Well, tonight's guest, I tell you what, she's a special lady all around anyway. I've worked with Marie for, gosh, a couple of years now, but we had never met face to face. Marie is the founder of the International Paranormal Reporting Group. She has a ton of teams. I'll let her talk about that in just a minute, that work under her. But it was a pleasure to get to meet her. Hopefully we can share some of our stories this evening. But Marie, thank you. Thank you for coming in and for being on the show with us again tonight. Can you hear us?
Thanks for having me.
You know people to a degree when you work with them the way we do, whether it be through email. We've had Skype meetings for, you know, a year or so now, and you get to know them. But really, just getting to sit face to face with you and talk with you at the event, I can't express how awesome that was, and what an opportunity it was for everybody at that event. How do you think it went?
I think it went awesome. It was wonderful being able to meet everybody face to face and really get to know them. It's not the same through email and on a forum, but when you meet face to face, what a group of amazing people.
Well, and you know, that's true. People look at Taps Family and sometimes they tend to think of it as a referral list, but they don't realize that there's a whole facet going on behind the scenes where we network, we you know, share information, we work together, we really do. So to get to sit together and actually talk together was just so rewarding. And this ended up being international as well. We had quite a Canadian turnout.
Oh, yeah, we did. They're awesome.
Aren't they? Those Canadians came in and just, man, they were great.
They were wonderful.
Canadians know how to drink beer very well, by the way.
Well, we won't comment there. We did have some time for fun, that's for sure. We did a little karaoke and all of that. But again, it was just rewarding to get to sit down and talk with those people face to face and to get to know them. And then as we moved on away from the reunion, that link is still there, which is great. And it's one thing that when we came together a year ago and decided to have this event, that was definitely one of our goals, is to strengthen that family atmosphere and bond. And I think we accomplished that. So, but Marie, it was just great meeting you. Just, you know, can't wait till next year.
I know. I'm so excited about it because it really did. The whole event really did. It brought together more of the family atmosphere. I think everybody feels a whole lot closer. And I just can't wait to see what the next year brings.
Well, and then one more thing about that event before we move on. One more thing that I thought was important is it gave Jason and Grant a chance to stand in front of their teams and express to them how appreciated they are. And that's a rare opportunity, really. The guys are so busy, and really to have, this is the first time all the, you know, not all of them, unfortunately, we couldn't have everybody there, but a good number of the TAPS family member teams were together, and to have Jason and Grant able to stand up and express their gratitude and really their pride for the program was nice to have.
I think that was really important because we hear it. It gets, you know, it gets trickled down and stuff, and they hear it from all of us, but, man, to have them say it, And you could tell that it came from the heart, that they really meant it.
Right.
I think it made all the difference in the world.
Now, if we can just get over the constant gloating over their volleyball game.
We'll never hear the end of it.
No, I know.
Did they win? Is that what I missed?
Well, it wasn't so much they. Apparently, Jason is a very good volleyball player. Very cutthroat.
Ah.
Yeah.
It was vicious. Yeah.
Yeah, people left with bruises and limping, and it was just... I didn't know that volleyball was a contact sport, but apparently it is.
It is now.
So there's got to be some dirt. Give me something good. Give me something juicy to bite into here.
I'll see you up till next year.
Yeah, we kind of made a pact.
What stays at the reunion? What happens at the reunion stays at the reunion, right?
Right. We'll just put it this way.
I live in Vegas.
We'll just say there have already been YouTube videos blocked. About that.
Oh, dear.
Speaking of which, I do got to be honest. I've been looking everywhere, like on people's Facebook pages and stuff. I've only seen maybe a half dozen pictures from the event so far. Is there anywhere I can go to? I want pictures, man. I want to see stuff.
There are hundreds of pictures. And so for those who are listening, who are TAPS family, that link should be already, if it hasn't already come out, will be sent out through your liaison. So get a hold of your liaison and get that link to our photo account. I won't even say what service it's with because we really don't want just the general public to have it. But there are hundreds of pictures, and then there will be videos. Now, these will be on YouTube. There will be three DVD-length videos released that have footage from the reunion and
awesome.
Things like that. So...
I knew running around in my pajamas was a mistake. I knew it.
Yeah, we warned you. There are always cameras around when there are investigators around.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
One of the things that we are going to do with those videos, though, is pull out just that segment of Jason and Grant expressing their gratitude to the teams, and that will be available just to view on its own. So that's something beneficial for the teams. So definitely don't miss it next year. We've got a year to plan. I even have the dates already, so that will be coming up through your liaison as well. We try not to give too many specifics publicly, but definitely a good time to become more involved as a TAPS family team, so that by the time the next reunion rolls around, you're involved and there. And so those of you listening, now's the time to get back on board.
Awesome.
100% worth 100% worth the trip.
Absolutely. Well, this lady's a busy lady anyway, and for her to have made the time to come out there is an honor in itself. Marie has her central office. Correct me if I described this wrong, Marie. And then you have like seven teams under you. Is that correct?
I do. We cover Idaho, Oregon, and then Spokane, Washington.
Now, I have to say, a lot of times when I hear about these large teams and large organizations, it's kind of concerning because you're never sure that they're all run well. But let me tell you, she has explained how they're all run. I've had time to work with Marie and her teams, and they are run professionally. She runs them very in a very organized manner. It's just very impressive. Any of her teams at any time are definitely trusted in AnyTap's client home. So can you explain to us how you got that started? I mean, that's a massive undertaking to have one team, let alone seven.
Well, it started, I mean, the reason that we branched out like that was because when we started forever ago, there weren't any teams here. But we had the client demand, and we needed to be able to help them and get out to them in a timely manner. And so that's why we decided to branch out, and it's just kind of gone from there. But I'll tell you, I can't do it by myself. I've got a team of absolutely wonderful people and directors and assistant directors. It really is a team effort.
Well, and how many of your team were there? Because you came quite a distance, but you brought several of your team to our event.
There were six of us.
Yeah,
that
attended.
Awesome. Myself, my Twin Falls director, and an Oregon director all attended.
Yeah, that's amazing. Quite a turnout for coming clear from one side of the country to the other. That was
impressive. Well, there's a challenge going on for next year. You know, there was mention on the board about, you know, a contest about who can bring the most team members, and so my team's been warned.
Oh,
we
no.
need to get their tickets, so we'll see.
Now, did whoever threw down that challenge understand that you have seven teams to pull from?
Gosh, no, I don't think they were thinking about that. Shush.
Oops, sorry.
My goal would be at least 50 people is what I'm hoping for, so.
Hey, that would be terrific. That would tickle me pink. That would be awesome.
And if I come alone, it's their loss.
Well, as long as you're there.
That's right. That's all that's really important. No, oh, geez, they're going to hear this.
Okay, now, is it difficult? Because I find it difficult sometimes just with one team to make sure everybody's on the same page. Everybody has all the current policies. You do have some wonderful directors in place. So is it difficult to manage that, or how do you do that? Do you have director meetings and then team meetings? How do you manage that?
We have very strict rules and protocol. We do monthly meetings, third Saturday of every month, and then on the third Sunday of every month, we have a director's call with all of my directors so we can go over everything that was covered in the meeting. We all follow the same exact rules and protocol, but every single thing that happens, whether it be a client referral, a brand new team member, anything, it all comes through my inbox first. And so we're in constant contact between our forums, the phone, texting. It's a lot of work.
It is, and it's amazing because, like I said, you know, anybody that's ever opened a team and operated a team understands that it can be challenging. So I applaud your efforts and your organization to keep those things running as smoothly as you do and to keep, and I know this because I've dealt with clients of yours. I know how in touch you are with each of your teams. It's a very, very organized process.
Well, that's the only thing that would work. And I had two goals when I started all of these teams. And the first and foremost was that they were organized and we all did the same exact thing. We did it the same way. There was no deviation from that. And the second thing was that we were family. You know, if somebody in Oregon, I've had people from Oregon teams come to help me move.
Oh, wow.
It's
nice.
A family. I mean, and that's the way we behave. And if somebody doesn't, if they come into the teams and they're not willing to behave that way and behave professionally, they're not around long.
Now, Marie, to be able to, you know, again, I'm sitting here extremely impressed with the fact that you can keep an organization that big, as organized as you do, because here it's just a very small team. Is there anything in your personal life, would you say personal or even in your professional life, through work that helped you, to be able to do what you do with, your TAPS family team?
Every single one of my team members, past and present, there's, you know, everybody that's come through the doors and that's had to leave or that remains all had a part in where we've come from and where we are now. They're amazing people. They really are. And even, you know, you hear teams, how they get someone who's just kind of a lemon and creates headache. But you know what? Even when you get someone like that, they're there to teach you a lesson. now it's up to you as to whether you take anything away from that or not.
Yeah.
I mean, well, still my rules are because somebody messed up.
Well, I've actually seen her with her, you know, some of her team members, and they do have that family kind of tie. You can see that, and I think that's very important. When you bring new people in, you know, there's always kind of an adjustment period, and even if you set it up the best way possible, sometimes you still get that new kid syndrome where everybody else is really tight, and that one person is still kind of an outsider and all of that. Do you find it hard to mesh new members into your new teams and to keep going on that? As you do add new members, what kind of procedure do you go through to acclimate them and to make sure that, you know, they're going to be a match and that kind of thing?
There is no procedure to do that. It's all in your interview process. You know, when we have a pretty lengthy interview, it's hour and a half, you can get a really good feel for whether someone's going to fit in or not. And I can honestly say, and any one of you can come to any one of my meetings, when you walk in the room, it's like you've known everybody forever. They're extremely friendly. They don't try and push anybody out or treat them like the new kid. I won't allow that. We all know how that feels when you were growing up in high school. I don't have that on my team.
Awesome.
But if you do have someone that's not going to fit in and that doesn't mesh, the team, if you have a good, strong team, they will weed that person out.
I like that answer. That I think that interview process is so, so important.
It really is. It makes or breaks a new team member. And if I find anybody on my team, whether they've been here a year or 10 years, if they're treating somebody like the new kid or like they're not welcome, then the one that was here 10 years is going to go. Because we're a family and we need to be able to work together. I don't do that, oh, I'll never investigate with him, things like that I hear about out there. I won't do it.
And Tim, was I kidding? She runs a tight ship. I don't know how she does it with this many people, but she really is. She could teach lessons on how to do this, I think.
Actually, you know, that's not a bad idea. Maybe at the next TAPS family get-together, maybe we do a few workshops and let Marie do one on managing bigger teams. Because, you know, don't take anything away from yourself, Marie. I know you. You're as humble as they come, and you're passing along And as you should to the people in your team, but don't ever forget that they always say that leadership trickles down. It starts from the top. So the team is doing, your managers and your other district managers are doing what they're doing because they're learning it from you first of all. So you deserve all the credit in the world as well.
Well, thanks. Absolutely. And I appreciate that. I really do. You know, and I do work hard, but I'm also the first to admit that if they're about to make a mistake, it's not one that I haven't already done.
Sure.
So I've learned, you know, the hard way too, and they teach me on a regular basis, but I'm sure I'm not liked sometimes, but that's okay.
It's hard to be at the top,
isn't it? It needs to be done right.
Well, Marie, one question I had for you with regard to you having such a large team, I think that gives you some unique opportunities, really. I know our team has a statistician on staff, and we track our events, our anomalous events, and our evidence and things like that, and the circumstances they happened under. And it's hard as one team to be able to make correlations with those events. You know, you have to have so many EVPs, and you have to have so many, you know, EMF spikes and things like that for those stats to mean much. And with you having seven teams, have you done anything to maybe track your evidence results and things like that, or have you considered that, or is there anything that you've undertaken, I guess would be the right word, since you have such a large team and have that advantage?
Yeah, and we have considered that. The hard part with that is the software,
right?
And trying to find a software that works really well. So everything's archived, everything's backed up, we have copies of everything, so it wouldn't be that hard once we find a decent program to be able to put it in there. The hard part is finding someone that wants to sit and go through all of that and enter it in, and a good program that can handle all of this, data that we have.
That is definitely difficult, and you know, that may be something, as we build our resource center, that I look at possibly including our team statistician in, because he loves it. He loves that kind of stuff. Numbers and things like that, I'm not so happy with, but he loves them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we need to look at, because I think in particular with you having such an organized protocol, that's another important thing when you're tracking those events, is making sure that you've got organized protocol. And with you having that in place, I think that makes it a perfect time or a perfect scenario with your team.
I think so too. I think it would be very interesting to see what the results are. So maybe somebody listening to this would be as interested in the numbers as an accountant and would like to sit down with me.
Well, I have a puppy howling in the background. I
don't know. A puppy?
Yes, he's howling in the background. I tried to shush him, so that's our accompaniment for the evening. Sorry about that. Oh, goodness. Marie, you're also, as if you're not busy enough, which you are so incredibly busy, you're also a member of our recruitment team, and I don't think we've mentioned that to this point. We do have a recruitment procedure in place, but can you maybe give some idea about the places we're focusing and recruiting right now, the different areas we have need, and those types of things?
I do not have a list in front of me.
I knew I threw that at you. Totally unprepared.
I know you so did, and I do not have a list in front of me.
We have some obvious, like Hawaii. Boy, have we been looking there. And
Alaska.
I really think, you know, Jeff and I used to say, and Marie and I could too, we should go to Hawaii to look for a team, right?
I would do that.
You need to scout it out. Yeah.
I mean, really.
Well, we have Alaska. We have a real need in Virginia. That was mentioned at the reunion.
Okay. Or West Virginia?
Those are the three that we need it really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that we do have some need. And then, you know, our wonderful producer Cormac is also on our recruitment team with international. He's actually our international liaison. And so he looks at our international teams. Now, when you look, it's kind of unfair because we have, you know, a recruitment team built in for the United States, a whole team full of people. And then we have Cormac for the whole rest of the world.
And a fine job he does.
He does do a fine job. But, you know, I look at it and I'm thinking, is this really fair? But, you know, he's already proven to be so talented. Why not? He can just take the whole rest of the world.
There we go.
You know, one cool thing that I think we can, while we're on this subject, one cool thing I think we can suggest to teams who are interested maybe in applying is to go to our snazzy new website and check out that coverage map. The coverage map puts a pin in every location where we have a team. So if they're curious if we have a need in an area, the thing to do would be to go to our New Taps Family website. They can do that by going to the main Taps website, the AtlanticParanormalSociety.com, and then they can either click on I Need Help, or they can go down to Taps Family and click that section and then go on to the website and look at that coverage map. And just see where we need teams. That's also a good way for clients to get a hold of us, of course, as well. But it really kind of brings to light how many teams we have when you can actually look at that coverage map and see those pegs in place, especially in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. And I really want to push people there too to help out, and especially also for you know, you may have touched on this too, Chris. Not only people looking for help, but of course, like you were saying, and with kind of throwing a curveball at Marie there, if you're a team and you're interested in becoming a team, that's a great way to find out too, is using that map. If there's opening in that area,
absolutely. We're so impressed with our we're so impressed with our webmasters for putting that together. And you know, you can even look down and see that we have a team in Argentina. I mean, we're just growing so much. So that's by and large in part due to our recruitment team, which, you know, Marie is, as I mentioned, a member of that team because she doesn't have enough to do.
Yeah, where do you find time to just have a personal life, Marie, or do you not?
I do. I'm married. I have a 14-year-old. I'm just waiting for somebody to tell me what sleep is.
Well,
I've heard
don't.
About it.
Yeah, don't find out, because then you'll want it. If you don't know what it is, you don't know you're missing it.
It's addictive once you figure it out.
Yes, it is.
But I slept so well at the Spalding, let me tell you. Holy cow.
You know, that's one thing I didn't mention. For anybody who just wants to go up there, was that not just a beautiful place?
Oh, it's gorgeous. I said that I'm going to go back at some point that has nothing to do with the reunion, but just to stay and read and catch up. And
And their staff, honestly, and you mentioned this, your team was impressed with the staff too, if I remember correctly. Their staff at that inn is phenomenal.
I can't say enough good about them. You know, I saw 50 people lined up at that front desk, all asking different questions, and not one time did a member of that staff get short. Not one time was there not a smile on their face. I mean, professional and just wonderful, wonderful, kind-hearted people. They worked so hard all weekend.
They did. And of course, we're referring to the Spalding Inn in Whitefield, New Hampshire. Beautiful area, not far from the Mount Washington Hotel. So I know a lot of people wanted to run over there and check out Mount Washington. Beautiful area. I would definitely recommend for anybody to head up that way.
I'm ready to move. It's gorgeous.
I think we should. I think we should open a Taps management office there.
Is it safe to say this second gathering will take place in the same location?
Well, what we're doing is we're trying to do this democratically. We're asking people to nominate locations for the next reunion, and those nominations can come in until July 1st, and then we'll take them and we'll vote on them. Spalding has already been heavily supported for the second reunion. However, I understand that that's difficult for the people on the West Coast or even Central U.S. So, you know, hopefully we will just be, you know, we're going to try to make as many people happy, but boy, it's hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I could be really selfish and say the West Coast, that's where it should be because this is my backyard. But regardless of where it is, it really, if you plan ahead, it really is not that, it's not overly expensive. And we have a year to plan and to save. I mean, everybody, regardless of where it's at, I would love to see three times as many people that turned out, and we had such a great turnout. They can make it. It'll be awesome.
Just a little bit of pre-planning.
Absolutely. You know, I'll throw it out there. My whole round trip was like $470.
Gosh, that's
from Little Idaho. So, no, not bad at all. Not if you look at it that way. And I only bought my ticket 3 months in advance. So,
not bad.
I'm gonna see my whole Western zone next year.
I just can't stress how the environment was enough. I mean, really, to sit down face to face with our family members, it truly put that family feel right into place that we've been needing. So
it really did. And you know, I've gone to other events where it's like, okay, at the end of the event, you're ready to go home. You're ready to get back into your own bed. At the end of this one, I found myself saying, I can't believe it's over and I don't want to leave.
Oh, wow.
I really want to stay here and visit with these people more, you know, and get to know them even better. So, I mean, that says a lot because I'm used to doing a lot of traveling and leaving, and I'm always ready to leave. Yeah. I didn't want to this time. I was having a blast.
I agree with you there, 100%. Wow.
That's impressive to hear. That, I'm hanging my head in shame.
Oh, you know, we missed you. And you know what we need to do, Tim?
We need to do the show live from there.
Oh, you just stole my idea.
Did I?
You did.
Sorry.
No matter where it is, let's plan that. Let's do what we need to do to make that happen. It'll be a weekend, but you know, Todd's really friendly on Jackalope. Maybe he'll make an exception for us next year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or if he can't make room for us, we'll record it and then we'll run it live. You know, in our regular show, whatever. We'll work something out. But
we'll make it work.
Yeah, we need to do a show from there.
I agree 100%.
All right. Well, Marie, since you, I'm sure, had to put off about 5 meetings just to be on the show with us here tonight, we don't want to hold you up anymore, so we will let you go. But thank you so much for being with us. And, you know, thank you so much for all the work that you do for the Taps family out there.
Oh, and thank you, guys. And thanks for having me. I really enjoy the show.
Marie, you take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay, wonderful. Have a good night, guys.
You too.
All right. Good night, Marie. There we go. One of the big dogs in the Taps family. She'll never admit it, but the work she does is second to none for sure. So.
Absolutely. One of the longtime management members and just as dedicated to Taps family as they come.
Absolutely. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a gentleman that's been on the show before, but he's never short on things to talk about. Dr. Kieran O'Keefe will be coming up next here on Taps Family Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio. You may want to keep the lights on.
Listening to Taps Family Radio. Tim and Chris are taking a potty break and we'll be right back. Hidden in the shadows of Dublin, the small and unassuming area known as Carlow, Ireland, holds a haunted history that you may not know about. The town dates back to before Ireland's written history, but now its haunted history has been written and recorded by authors Cormac Strain and Danny Carthy. Haunted Carlow takes you on an eerie and fascinating journey through pubs, cafes, private homes, and schools. Go to hauntedcarlow.com. or Amazon.com to get your copy today and see a side of Carlow, Ireland you never knew existed. You're listening to Taps Family Radio, the show your mother warned you about. Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you on this Tuesday evening, and very excited to be bringing our next guest onto the show this evening. He has been a long supporter of Taps Family Radio, as we have been a longtime supporter of his as well, and the work that he is doing in the field. One of the few out there who actually have the initials doctor in front of his name, and it brings well-deserved respect to his work. We'd like to welcome to Taps Family Radio Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. Kieran, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks. It's always such a pleasure to have you on. I've been excited knowing you were coming back. This is a great thing.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back. It's great. Yeah,
we were just kind of talking off the air. We were trying to remember when we had you on, and it's you were one of our first guests when we first relaunched Taps Family Radio. So kind of got a soft spot in our heart here.
It's almost like we're having an anniversary together, isn't it?
Almost, exactly. Who's got the champagne? I want a glass. So it's been a year now, Kieran, since we last spoke. What has been going on? I know you just got done writing, which could put you on the New York Times bestseller. You wrote the foreword to Cormac Strain's new book,
Monte Carlo.
Yeah, so maybe that'll put you on. It looks great. I can't wait to get my first copy of it. And so I've seen video of you. You not only wrote the foreword, but you were there with Cormac and Danny and Barry as well, Barry Fitzgerald.
That's right.
And had a big launch party, didn't you?
Yes, it was great. It was part of the Eggshire Arts Festival down in Carlo, which is quite a well-known arts festival. And Cormac and Danny arranged to have the book launch there in a pub, as you do.
Yeah, I could tell that was in a pub. I wasn't surprised.
Quite a bit of Guinness was had. Let's leave it at that. But the book launch gave an opportunity for Cormac and Danny to kind of say thanks to the people that had provided the stories, a lot of the accounts that form part of the book, but also just to introduce themselves to others that didn't know them and kind of promote the book. And as Danny and Cormac kept on saying, put Carlo on the map, really, because it does have some fascinating accounts, fascinating stories and fascinating haunted locations. And when they asked me to write the foreword, I was only too happy to do so. I did say, however, with a caveat, I'd like to read it first before I give the foreword.
So apparently you gave it your blessings then, right?
I gave it my blessings, yeah. It was good. It's unique, I think, amongst, you know, a lot of these haunted books that are out there. You know, there's a lot of local experts or local amateur historians who like to write these books, and I don't think it's a bad thing, but it's often nice to see a book that has a lot of the contemporary stories in them. Mm-hmm. You know, that has stories within the last few years, also running parallel with some of the more traditional ones that go back 50, 100 years, 150 years. You know, because there has to be recognition that whilst we often look back to the older places as being, you know, the better places for eyewitness testimony or better places to investigate because they've got a longer history, at some point we have to start collecting the accounts now. Because in 50 years, 100 years' time, this is going to be the history that they're going to look back at.
Excellent way to put
great
that.
Point,
people,
yeah.
Right. Wow. Well, I look forward to seeing the book, and I know there are one or two others getting ready to come out because for us, you know, we can't just hop a plane and head to Ireland and do all of that investigating.
That's true.
So this gives us a unique opportunity, too, to be able to hear those stories and see them. So.
Yeah, and I guess it goes both ways as well in terms of North America, you know, in terms of us in Europe not being able to just pop on a plane either. Going to North America, there are lots of authors out there, and like I said, lots of expert local historians, as well as some of the known authors, Jeff Bellinger, for example, these sorts of people who do churn out the books about certain areas, certain locations in the States, and they're a joy to read, if only just to whet the appetite for us here stuck in England who want to go and visit.
Yeah. Now, I found it strange, but in a good way, because Carlo is a town. I mean, it's a small town. It's you know, and it's just kind of not a lot of people know about it. I mean, maybe over there they do, but, you know, it's hidden in the shadows of Dublin. It's a very old town, but of all places for, you know, some book publishers and editors to come to Cormac and Danny and say, we want you to do kind of a regional place of Carlo. Do you have any insight on that? I mean, why would they pick, you know, a place like that as opposed to, say, a Dublin or something bigger?
Well, let's not take any of the glory away from any of the books that are published about Dublin, because there are some, you know, local books focusing on some of the Dublin hauntings.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
So let's not take away from that. And Dublin has some fantastic locations. Mm-hmm. I think Carlo, being kind of what we call initially a satellite town, a town that was about an hour outside of Dublin. I guess maybe it is a case of looking for that contemporary feel. I mean, maybe the best way to illustrate it with an analogy is one of the best cases or in my view, one of the most interesting cases is associated with the old jail in the center of Carlow. And there have been some hauntings associated with the hangings there and people who are imprisoned there. And you can still go and visit that incredibly old jail, which has been there, I think, for centuries. But a shopping centre, a modern shopping centre, has been built up around it. And so it's very, very bizarre when you go in to Carlow Shopping Centre. You're surrounded by modern shops, you know, a shopping mall, essentially, very, very modern. And right in the centre, where the cafe is, forms kind of the original jailer's house. And it's just been left as is, but the shopping centre has been built around it. And I think for that reason, it kind of makes Carlow a little bit unique in that it has a history going back, you know, as long as Dublin. It has some of these old places, but because of industrialisation, it became quite an industrial and quite a modern town. So you've got two definite layers. And I guess that makes it a little bit more interesting, perhaps, for publishers looking for, you know, a different perspective on hauntings.
Very neat. If you're just joining us right now on Taps Family Radio, our guest is Dr. Kieran O'Keefe, and he is joining us. And if you want to join us live right now at tapsfamilyradio.net, of course, there you can find the chat room. If you have any questions for Dr. O'Keefe, you can write them in there. We will pass them along to him. And I know we've got a couple, which we'll get to shortly. But in case anyone's wondering, doctor in front of his name, he is a doctor of, is it of parapsychology. You are a parapsychologist, and it seems like there's less and less out there these days. Is that just a wrong perception, or are you seeing that too?
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of genuinely qualified parapsychologists. Right. If you just kind of take a straw poll as to the number of people calling themselves a parapsychologist, I think there might be an increase. But indeed, they wouldn't have been people that have gone through, you know, the standard academic route and the qualification route that I've been through and some of my colleagues been through. Because in terms of actual qualifications, you're really only talking about PhD level of qualification. There are some courses out there, but generally it's PhD. And I think, yeah, I think you're right, Tim, that it is on the decline. And part of that is because some of the major centers of parapsychology where you could have studied this subject and now closing or have now reduced inside size just because of economy and because of lack of funding. Prime example would be Edinburgh. Edinburgh University, where, you know, for the last 20 years, one of the people called him almost like a father of parapsychology. He was at Edinburgh, Bob Morris. He passed away, and then there was a issue with funding, and now a unit which maybe had 15, 20 people and PhD students running through all the time now only has two or three members of staff.
You know, that actually came up. I'm sad to hear that. You know, we've talked about people who kind of self-proclaim themselves parapsychologists because they've read a few books, or, you know, and I hate to be catty, but honestly, that is the case. And I know that you know that as well as we do, that some people just, you know, will deem themselves parapsychologists. But at our recent TAPS family reunion, we were talking with Grant. It just came up in conversation about how you know you're dealing with somebody who is genuinely a parapsychologist. And he said, in his opinion, if they haven't gone through the University of Edinburgh, then they're probably not qualified, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And not necessarily not qualified, but he just thought that was the only remaining in existence program.
Right.
And then now to hear that it's kind of diminished too. So what would you say to people who really want to genuinely become, I mean, you've got, maybe we need to go to that. You've got some courses offered that can maybe now be that stand-in or take the place of what would
have been. Yes. Although, you know, just to clarify in a way, the Edinburgh, you know, was seen as kind of the guiding light for parapsychology for many, many years. And there's still a number of brilliant researchers there. Caroline Watt, and she also runs an online just a single online course in parapsychology, which is worth looking at, a distance learning course. A chap called Peter Lamont, who's a historian, who talks about the history of psychical research and hauntings and also mediums and magic and that sort of stuff. So they're still active. But in terms of places you can study it, in the UK now, Northampton is one of the leading places. There's a number of well-known parapsychologists there. And then there's the odd course dotted around. So Coventry University has a couple of parapsychologists. And I would call them more anomalistic psychologists, which means they're not just interested in the parapsychology phenomena, which is normally telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance and hauntings, but they branch out to UFOs, alien abduction, that sort of thing. And so there are still a number of places within the UK, but literally you're talking three, maybe four in the UK, on the continent, in Europe, one in Sweden, and there's a research center in Freiburg in the south of Germany. There's a couple of people. I'm currently based, although I'm living in the UK, I'm currently based at University of Toulouse as a research associate. So I'm there as a parapsychologist. But there's really only the odd person here or there. I shouldn't say odd person because that means something else, doesn't it? But single parapsychologist here and there. And in the States, I would say University of Virginia has a few parapsychologists and certainly a strong research line in mediumship research. And also, I think it's called Atlantic University, Nancy Zingroni and Carlos Alvarado, who are formidable parapsychologists who've been very, very active and very well known in the field for about 20 years or longer. And they run an online course, but they also do courses at Atlantic University. So there's a number of different options that people in North America can take. They can look to see if any of their local universities do modules in any of the semesters. Some of the upper years, the senior years of university. Or they can inquire at Atlantic University, where Nancy and Carlos are. Or they can look for online courses. And that's where we come to... Chris, you were asking about my online course. It came out of people asking for recommendations where they could study parapsychology. And aside from a course that's set up by Lloyd Auerbach in California, which is another course I'd recommend, there isn't anything out there. And it's pretty much dross. It's either courses that claim to be parapsychology, but ultimately they teach you how to read auras, which is not really parapsychology at all. Or they ask you to read one book, pay your money, and then they give you a certificate.
Oh, you know, and I've seen those, and I wonder, you know, you could read that book on your own, and they want hundreds of dollars for that.
I know. Just to get a certificate on your wall and to say that you've got a qualification from that particular, from that online degree. So I could do that. You know, I could easily just set up a course and say, read this book, answer a few questions, and hey, you got the badge of credibility from Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. But it was very important to me, if I wanted to put my name to something, it had to be a course that wasn't like the others, that basically, number one, had interaction with me. So I run chat room tutorials on a weekly basis with the students where we focus on the theme of that week, but also they can ask any questions about parapsychology. Beyond that, they get access to articles that I've written and also articles that are within my library that you wouldn't have access to. And also they take part in assignments and kind of online investigations on things like psychic criminology and also haunting cases, that sort of thing. It's very interactive. And the point being that at the end of it, students feel as though they've genuinely earned something that they can put on their wall.
Well, you know, I, I think one of the reasons also that you didn't just do a quickie course with your name on a certificate is the very thing that lends you so much legitimacy in this field, is you've taken the time. First of all, it means something to you personally. You obviously, yeah. Your heart is in this, as well as, you know, your mind and everything, but your heart is in this. And, you know, you took the time to educate yourself appropriately and thoroughly, and then you also have the experience to back it up. So somebody who's taken all that time and who has that love of what they're doing doesn't just halfway do something. You know, you put your full self into it, and I think that's, you know, like I said, one reason you're so well respected and have that legitimacy is you've prepared yourself and have that experience to back what you're doing.
Yeah, very kind. I'm blushing. Lots of compliments there. You're too kind. But no, you're right. You know, they could, as well as having a public figure means I could easily do the short courses, make it very, very easy for people and just rake in the money. But at the same time, like you said, I'm invested in it. It's also very easy to have a comeback from it. You know, there are people that are going out from my courses and ultimately saying that they've taken my courses. And that reflects on me, how they behave themselves in terms of how they discuss various aspects of parapsychology and haunting experiences. And I don't want people going away from the course and, you know, giving me a bad reputation. You know, so it needs to reflect when they actually graduate from those courses.
Now, if someone's interested, Kieran, in looking into your courses, what is the best way for them to find out information on it?
There's two ways. There's a Facebook page, The School of Parapsychology, and linked on that page is a web page, which is theschoolofparapsychology.org. And then you can find out information about the various courses on there and the upcoming specialized courses that myself and a colleague, Steve Parsons, have got about different aspects of haunting investigations and a very specialized field. Maybe we can chat about those later.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I just want to take a little bit step back and something you said a little bit earlier, which I found very interesting. We've been talking about already how less and less universities are offering courses, which is sad to see. You had also mentioned how some schools are kind of teaming it up with some other studies. Do you, in your professional opinion, do you see possibly eventually that's what we're going to see, is that parapsychology and, say, ufology and maybe even cryptozoology, like somehow anything that is of the unexplained is going to become like one subject matter, maybe?
It's possible, yeah. I think parapsychology is very distinct in terms of it being more laboratory-focused. A lot of people think me as a parapsychologist, all I ever do is go out to haunted locations, but I'm primarily involved in laboratory experiments, and I think that'll stay with parapsychology. If you wanted to have a look at things like cryptozoology, you know, Nessie and the Yeti and those sort of things, there would never be any part of that that would involve laboratory research. The same way with UFOs and alien abduction, it would be very difficult to have a theme of research that's solely laboratory experimental. It would always be about talking to eyewitnesses and that sort of thing. But I think you're right. I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head, is that for parapsychology ultimately to survive, there needs to be recognition that it needs to look at other areas and whether those other areas are other anomalous areas, which are, like you say, UFOs, abductions, cryptozoology. But beyond that, even things like the recent trend of demonology, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And we're using kind of the more common terms, terms the public would know. But parapsychology might say, okay, well, yes, there's interest in this stuff. Let's try and incorporate a more anthropological look or a more sociological look at things. So instead of just doing the laboratory work, let's head out of the laboratory a bit and talk to some of these people, talk and witness firsthand what they're going through. And there's already a move to do that. There was a discussion earlier on a radio show about something called para-anthropology, something that a guy called Jack Hunter has set up in England. And it's kind of a recognition that here's this field, parapsychology, it's been going along in parallel with a field called anthropology, where essentially researchers go out and they sit with people or talk to people about their experiences or witness them and just observe them firsthand without really, you know, with trying to be a little bit inconspicuous and not alter the behavior in any way. And he's kind of saying, well, there's these two things going on. Parapsychologists are interested in telepathy experiences, when people predict the future as well, or when people have haunting experiences. Well, anthropologists can lend a lot to what parapsychology is doing, and vice versa. So yeah, so I think it's a generally heading down that road of parapsychology cannot be too restrictive. It just needs kind of interdisciplinary, you know, and it needs to kind of start to work with other researchers and other fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good question.
Well, we do actually have a few questions from the chat room, and one of those is kind of involved with what you just said, but maybe just to narrow it down, the first question is, what is the difference between parapsychology and just average psychology, just general psychology, I guess is what she means, in the aspects of paranormal research?
It's a very good question. The main difference is in terms of what's studied. Parapsychology is the scientific study of paranormal phenomena. It's ESP, which is telepathy, precognition, and clairvoyance, and PK, psychokinesis, but also forms of after-death communication and survival. So whether that's haunting experiences or mediumship. Within psychology, mainstream psychology, you wouldn't study those phenomena. You might study things that could explain some of the parapsychological phenomena. And a good example would be something, you know, we're all aware of, and that's the idea of suggestion. If I suggest to you that a place is haunted, it might mean that when you go into that place, you react in a particular way. You instantly interpret things as paranormal just because I've told it to you. So therefore, you know, I'm suggesting it to you. Suggestion is an area that's studied in psychology. And so there's a link there because, of course, they might be looking at the way suggestion can work in a haunted environment. But ultimately, the difference is parapsychology looks at paranormal phenomena. Regular psychology is all about the mind and everything that the mind is involved with.
You know, and actually one thing you just said there kind of goes into the next question. And thank you for clarifying that, by the way. Mm-hmm. The next question we have says, how much is made up in one's mind, the things that they see, hear, and feel? And, you know, I can see a lot of that being the power of suggestion. We all know that, you know, if one person gets creeped out in a room, everybody else is going to get creeped out in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So her question is, how much is made up in one's mind, the things they see, hear, and feel?
I wish I could give a percentage.
We want a number.
83.5% of haunted cases are all to do with the mind. That would be great. Just tick them off one by one. It's tough to say how many of them. It really, really is tough. I think maybe it's better to think about it in this way, is that every time there's a haunting experience, every time somebody has a haunting experience, there could be a number of different explanations for what's going on. And it's nice to kind of divide them into the environmental reasons and the psychological reasons, which, like you say, are to do with the mind. The environmental are things like EMF, infrasound, temperature, humidity, those sort of things. The psychology side is everything that you've just said. So suggestion, but also, you know, group conformity or contagion, which is what you're basically saying. If somebody else has an experience in a group and then you have, you know, a similar experience just because they've had it. Not that you're faking it, but it's just it's a psychological idea. Hallucination, that's another psychological idea or psychological thing that happens. And so I guess the difficulty is how often does that happen? That there's a psychological reason for what's going on. In my experience, and of course I can't be present at every single haunting investigation that's ever been done and every single haunting experience that everybody has ever had, but I would say the majority of experiences, there would be a psychological explanation. Or at least let me put it this way, there would be a plausible psychological explanation for what's going on. You'd still have the caveat that there may be a paranormal explanation, but often the moment's gone. So it's very difficult to assess, especially if there isn't a psychologist there or it's not a controlled environment. But there was a colleague, a chap called Chris Romer, who gave a presentation at a conference a couple of weeks ago, looking at recent surveys in which people reported haunting experience or haunting encounters, better way of putting it, haunting encounters in the bedroom when they were in bed, either going to sleep or waking up from sleep. And I think it was close to two-thirds, maybe even 70% of all of the cases that came in through the surveys. And you're talking a few thousand representing kind of the UK population. And so therefore you're looking at about 70% of those cases could be explained because of hallucinations or to do with things like sleep paralysis and that sort of stuff. When you then get into actual investigations, it's a different story, of course.
That's a really high number. And, you know, I'm sure that you've dealt with this too. One thing I've found with clients that I am just positive have experienced sleep paralysis, because it is such a terrifying and can be such a terrifying event, it's physical, it's emotional, it's, you know, visual and everything else, they're unwilling to really let go of it being a paranormal experience. And it's hard to convince them that this is actually a medical, well, not really a medical, but a physical event. And not a paranormal event. So how would you suggest, because I know that I'm not the only one that runs into that. I've had sleep paralysis before, so I know firsthand that it's terrifying. Until you really understand what it is. You know, I've been able to kind of pull myself out of it now that I know what it is. But how would you suggest then to people that are just there? I've had so many clients just not even want to hear it, that it's sleep paralysis. They know that something was holding them on the bed and paralyzing them.
How would you try and kind of get them to think differently about their experience? It's a very tough one. As human beings, we all inherently suffer from something called cognitive dissonance. And that's essentially when we have a belief in anything, that we tend to ignore anything that contradicts that belief.
Right.
You know, and you can have it with superstition, you can have it with religion, you know, you can have it with even minor things. You know, as a parent, you know, if you believe that a particular remedy for your child's cold works, then any sort of evidence to the contrary, you might not believe. And so that's what's happening with, you know, this particular client you're talking about, or any other people that have a similar sort of experience. It's very difficult to turn their mind round to what's going on. My only suggestion is, and I found this kind of works with some people that I've spoken to, is giving them a similar scenario that's happened to somebody else. That's not exactly the same, but a similar sort of scenario. And saying, well, this is, you know, and describe the person being in sleep, describe what happened, how they reacted to it, and kind of how they formulated or how they described what happened. And either describe it as a haunting experience or describe it as an alien abduction experience. Something that's out of the belief kind of circle of the person that you're talking to. If you talk about sleep paralysis in that way, but give a very wacky outcome, that the person having sleep paralysis thought that it was alien abduction, or thought that there was, you know, a large, fat, old hag sitting on his chest, which is, you know, something that some people report, then the person in front of you might say, well, no, that's ridiculous. You know, why would they think that? There's no such thing as aliens. Or why would it be somebody, you know, somebody big sitting on their chest? You know, the way you describe it, that sort of thing. And it's just getting to them to the point where they start to question slightly. I think trying to get them to do a full 180, very difficult and near impossible. But just getting them to question it a little bit, and maybe they're on the road to changing their mind.
So maybe just infuse a little doubt there. And
yeah, just a little doubt. And also, you know, there's the problem is that there are some great papers on sleep paralysis, but they're written by, you know, I'm guilty as well, written by scientists who are not writing for the lay public.
Right.
But there are some popular books out there that are written. I don't want to use the word skeptic because immediately everybody goes, no, don't want to hear from the skeptics. But there are some, you know, paranormal books out there. There's Paranormality has just come out by Richard Wiseman. And although there's some stuff in there people might not agree with, there's reference to things like sleep paralysis. There's a book that's just coming out, I think, stateside, called Fringeology. And it's a guy called Steve Volk, and he's going on a journey, basically a questioning journey, trying to find out how the brain deals with these sort of things. You know, what sleep paralysis is, how the brain interprets haunting experiences. But both of those examples are written for the general public. They're written in language that's easy to understand, and they make for an exciting read. Maybe that's the sort of thing people can pick up. You know, you can recommend to people to try and get them to think differently.
Terrific. Yeah, it's always great to have those resources to offer. That's terrific.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've always found the subject of sleep paralysis so interesting because it seems to be the one intersection where psychology, you know, with you've got the old hag syndrome, you've got alien abduction and alien. It seems to be the one place where all of them seem to intersect just for a bit.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting because it's interesting. What is going on at that intersection point?
Right. Exactly.
You and I and somebody else can have exactly the same experiences. I've had a sleep paralysis, and I only had it within the last 10 years, even though I was talking about it as a possible explanation prior to that. And you're right, Chris, when you say how scary it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until you've actually had it, it's very difficult to kind of empathize with how terrifying it can be. But you have lots of different people having exactly the same kind of biological experience. And yet they interpret it differently. And that's what I find fascinating. And that's, you're right, Tim, where the psychology comes in, because it's almost then tying into either your belief, you know, whatever your strongest belief is in how you interpret the sleep paralysis, or sometimes quite simply, what was the movie you watched earlier on that night?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it can be simple as that. Fascinating.
It is. It really is. Chris, did we have another question from the chat room?
Yeah, actually, we do have a few. Let's see. Okay, here's one. The question is, do you believe that paranormal reality TV hurts the field?
controversial question.
Yes, it is.
Especially asked to me, having been part of paranormal reality TV. There's two sides to it. My initial answer would be no, for the simple reason that I don't think we'd be in the position today were it not for paranormal TV, or paranormal reality TV. And what I mean by that is we wouldn't have, I don't think, Taps Family Radio. You and I wouldn't be talking to each other. I wouldn't have been invited to do a foreword for Cormac's book, Haunted Carlo. You know, you wouldn't have lots and lots of groups out there, you know, investigating locations. You wouldn't have people so openly talking about their experiences. You wouldn't necessarily have the access to equipment that you would have had in the past. You certainly wouldn't have been aware of so many locations that you were in the past, you know, that were potentially unknown in the past. There's all of that. And, of course, all the build-up, huge build-up in resources that we've got now, the thousands, hundreds of thousands of web pages, books on the subject, all of this. I think this has been hugely influenced by reality, paranormal TV. And that's the positive side. There is the negative side, which is, I think, all exactly the same thing, is that because of paranormal reality TV, we have so many groups trying to investigate haunted locations. And some of those groups try and emulate what they see on television. When at the end of the day, some television programs are, they're not investigating, or they have a different sort of motivation when they're investigating. Some groups will investigate to try and gather information, to gather data, to gather evidence of a haunting at a particular location. Whereas with a lot of paranormal TV, it's very much the sensational factor. You know, I always give the example that Kath, the makeup lady on Most Haunted, the number of vigils that Kath and myself would do, I was going to say a bedroom, but that's a bit rude. But we would do the number of lone vigils the two of us would do in rooms, and nothing would happen. Now, an episode of Most Haunted for 50 minutes with Kath and I sitting there where nothing happens, you know, there's no producer, editor, director, channel controller in their right mind that would allow that go on TV.
Right.
Because people just wouldn't find that interesting. And so people have to recognize that when they're watching paranormal TV, there's editing going on in terms of making it look exciting. And for that reason, you know, people have to recognize that when they go out and do the investigations, that it doesn't often reflect what happens on TV. And, you know, for the hardened investigators, for the veteran investigators, you know, us on the air at the moment, we know that often investigations can be interminably boring.
They're boring.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and just nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. And so I think, yeah, the one part of it, the one disadvantage is all of the groups cropping up all over the place, the desire for groups to become successful, which, you know, in their eyes is getting a TV show or, you know, doing investigations and televising those investigations online. And that's a mark of success. So there's that. There's also the problem, of course, with locations now, which is absolutely crazy. I don't know what the situation is fully in North America, but in the UK, as a result of the TV programs, locations are charging lots of money for investigators to come in and investigate.
Happening here too.
Yeah. And it just makes investigations for small amateur groups extremely tough. Extremely difficult because they have to raise the funds somehow. So that's the two main reasons. The third reason that people don't necessarily talk about so much, but which is a huge bugbear of mine, is ethics. Ethics in haunting investigations. And that people watch what happens on paranormal TV and they think, oh, we can do that. Especially because a lot of these shows... like, for example, Ghost Hunters. You know, it's Jason and Grant, who down-to-earth guys. You know, during the day they're plumbers, and then they investigate at night. Now, of course, slightly different. The same with Most Haunted. You're seeing essentially regular people, apart from perhaps the medium and myself, but regular people who are cameraman, soundman, presenter. People who have daily jobs, and it goes for TAPS, it goes for Paranormal Adventures, Ghost Adventures as well, I would argue, any of these shows. And so people look at it and go, well, I could do that. All I need is a camcorder or a piece of equipment, and I can go into a location and investigate it. If it's a public location and they're paying for it, I don't have a problem with that, because it's, you know, no matter how they do it, there are lots of different ways of investigating, and they may be doing it to gather evidence for sensation seeking. It doesn't matter. It's their own choice. It's when people start to access private residences. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
Absolutely.
And I know, because I was over there last summer, I know that there are a lot of groups out there that do take on private cases.
You just hit something that I think I spoke about on our last show, that if people right. want to get into this field for the adrenaline rush, that's fine. Do it. Go get your adrenaline rush, but do not involve private clients. Do not go into residences and disturb people's homes in your effort to get your adrenaline rush.
No, exactly. Exactly. Oh. Because you don't realize the ethical impact of what you're doing. You don't realize the psychological influence of what you're doing simply by just stepping through that front door.
Mm-hmm.
Even before anything else happens, it's just walking through that front door, the impact that you have turning up, you know, and then beyond that, you know, if you then start to get out equipment, the impact that would have. If you then start to talk about the case or try to interpret what the person's telling you and suddenly start calling it a poltergeist or, you know, call it a demon, something like that, you know, the influence, that the impact that you're having on that person sitting in front of you is huge. It's absolutely huge. And of course, the other thing is, which we all realize, is that people that report hauntings in their private residences, they could be doing it for a number of different reasons. It could be a genuine haunting, and they could genuinely want help. But there also could be psychological issues. There could be mental health problems.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're not all experts. We don't all know how to interpret that. So
yeah. I think you had mentioned him earlier, Kieran. One of the authors out there who I think has written a great book for this subject exactly, because if you want to do it for the rush that you remember as a kid getting with a good ghost story, mm-hmm. and you just Jeff Blanger wrote a book called Legend Tripping.
Brilliant book.
It is. And I think it lends exactly to this. If you want to go out and just relive what you remember as a child hearing a good ghost story, buy Jeff's book, learn what legend tripping is, and stick with that. Because there's a lot of fun in that. Jeff will always remind you. Sometimes we, you know, and this is not dealing with the families. This is just when we're out there in the historical haunts. You know, sometimes we get so wrapped up in our tools and our equipment and our gadgets and our lights that we forget to just have fun when we're at those type of locations, you know?
Yes. Yeah. You're so right. And yeah, definitely point people in that direction, because there is, you know, let's be honest, there's an element of this where many of us got involved in this area at the start anyway, for exactly that, for that, you know, kind of legend tripping idea, for the thrill of the investigation, just visiting these places, just talking to eyewitnesses, simple as that.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, definitely.
Well,
but it's sorry, I was going to finish off that particular question. Sorry to cut you off, Chris, by saying,
go ahead.
I don't think there is a short answer to, you know, the impact of paranormal TV. It's just because within the last 10 years, we've seen an explosion of the reality shows that it's directly resulted in an explosion in the field in terms of the number of groups. In the UK, 10 years ago, we had less than 200 groups. Now we're at 3,000 and counting. And I'm sure the same sort of increase has happened in North America.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've heard people say over and over again, there's a team on every corner. And, you know, one thing I think people need to do when they're looking at the field is not maybe take so much discouragement out of this, but to do what you would do with any field. If you're going to go seek out a medical doctor, you're going to do your research, and you're going to be discriminating about who you choose, because let's face it, we wish every doctor was qualified and that we could trust them all, but you can't. And the same with a paranormal team. There are those, you know, kind of adrenaline rush teams. We know there are teams of teenagers, not that teenagers are bad people, but, you know, they're just not experienced. And, you know, people need to be discriminating about who they're going to go to for not only help, but for information, for advice, and seek out those legitimate people in the field.
And I think you've touched upon something that's prime, but also quite difficult, I think, for, you know, a lot of people out there who, genuine people in their homes who may have a haunting experience. What is their exposure to what they can expect from an expert or an investigator? It's paranormal TV.
Right.
And so I think there's the other side of it, which is these people who are having, might have these genuine experiences, are expecting taps, are expecting paranormal state, are expecting most haunted, are expecting groups to act in a way that they've seen on television.
Right.
You know, so I was talking about, you know, the ethical impact of groups going into private homes, but let's also flip it over as well. There are groups out there who are good groups, who are operating ethically, who are have the research behind them, who have the knowledge, who, you know, are not screaming at everything that happens, who are not going the sensational route, who are really trying to do a good job. But then how difficult is it for them to go into a home where all they're expected to do is either scream and do a seance, you know, like Most Haunted, or set up CCTV cameras everywhere like Taps. You know, it's kind of, there's an expectancy there too, which has to be overcome in that initial sit down with the client, which is also very tough.
You know, and I've even seen clients go to seek out another team because the first team wasn't sensational enough and didn't give them that, you know, and they'll go seek out another team because they didn't get that designation of haunted, you know.
No.
And so that's, I think it all goes back to that education, you know, educate your clients as you move through the process, and do what you can to dispel the myths while you
do that. Exactly. Yeah, very tough.
Well, Kieran, thank you so much. We could always go on another hour with you easily. I don't think we've even touched the surface of what we wanted to talk to you about tonight. But how about we just promise each other it won't be another year before you come back? How does that sound?
Yeah, let's do that. I like the sound of that.
All right.
Yeah.
Kieran O'Keefe, definitely. Thank you so much for being with us. And if you want to find out more about Kieran, his official website, theparapsychologist.com. You can read up on Kieran there and find out what's going on with him and what's happening. Again, Kieran, thank you so much for being with us.
No, thank you, Tim. Thank you, Chris. It's been great talking to you.
Oh, we look forward to talking to you soon
as well.
He hears you. He's smiling in the background. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from Taps Family Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio. We'll be right.
When you need to know what goes bump in the night, contact the Wausau Paranormal Research Society, serving the entire state of Wisconsin. Investigations are free of charge and completely confidential. You'll receive objective, scientific analysis of the activity in your home. The goal is to provide you with a rational explanation for what you're seeing or hearing. The Wausau Paranormal Research Society, where the paranormal and reality meet. To schedule an investigation, visit WPRS.net.
You told us you wanted more variety.
All types of music. I love the music.
With less commercials, and we deliver. Jackalope Radio.
If you are in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at IPRGC.com. That's IPRGC.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group is a proud TAPS family member.
And welcome back to TAPS Family Radio as we're getting ready to wrap things up here on another wonderful show. I'll tell you what, Chris, you know, to even call what we do any form of work is ridiculous when we get to sit down and talk to folks like Marie Cuff and Dr. Kieran O'Keefe for a couple hours. I mean, this is this is as good as it gets as far as I'm concerned.
What a privilege and what a terrific interview. I mean, I really honestly could just sit and continue talking to him. I even forget we're on the radio. It's just so fantastic to talk to him.
Well, he's got such a great reputation and well-deserved. I mean, he's been one of the, he's been one of the solid men out there who has been working for years, and he's got the credentials to back up what he says and what he does. So it's always an honor to have Dr. Kieran O'Keefe on with us. Right. And if you are just joining us tonight, we do know that we had a few technical difficulties where an old show was being heard. But the good news is we have been live for a while now. And if you missed any of the beginning of the show, our awesome producer, Cormac, has been recording everything, and it'll be up on the podcast, and you can hear the beginning of the show as well. And keep in mind, if you love your podcast of Taps Family Radio, Cormac Strain has created for us, exclusively for Taps Family Radio, our own apps for iPhone and for the Droid. And if you go to Taps Family Radio, and if it sounds like I'm typing it as I'm saying it, I am, because I accidentally closed out my screen. TapsFamilyRadio.net. If you go there, that is our official homepage, and it'll show you all of the podcasts on there. You can read up on them and listen to them there. Or if you want to download the iPhone app now for Taps Family Radio, the link is there, and the Droid, which we are testing right now. So if you have a Droid and you test it, we need to hear back from you and would love to hear back from you. Here's the cool thing about it. Once you put these on your phone, when we're live, you can listen to the live shows. You can listen to our podcasts anytime you want. And then when we are not on, or you are not listening to one of our podcasts, you get to listen to any of the other great shows on that happen to be live at that moment on Jackalope Radio, which is the home of Taps Family Radio. So it is so cool. You were saying earlier in the show, Chris, I mean, I can't think of any other shows that can, you know, outside of big market radio stations, but folks who are doing what we do that have apps like this.
I really can't think of any. I mean, we've truly gone mobile.
Yeah.
I mean, most phones nowadays are smartphones. Mm-hmm. They're going to be that iPhone or that Android, and we have gone mobile. I'm so impressed. Cormac is just a genius. I'm convinced of it.
I am too now. I always knew the folks over there in Ireland were smart, but I didn't realize they were that smart. So that is awesome. Keep in mind, when you're at TapsFamilyRadio.net as well, there's a link right on there that you can just click to Jackalope Radio to hear our shows. And also, that is where our chat room is at. You can join us every live show, or if it's not during a live show, but you still want to join our chat room, that is open 24/7. Also want to remind everyone too about Paranormal Community Radio, which is co-hosted by our booking I don't want to call him booking agent because he's not our agent, but he does the booking of our guests for our show, Larry, and his co-host Tom. They're going to be sitting down and talking paranormal stuff with Larry Flaxman, author and founder of RPAS, based out of Arkansas. And he is also part of a Taps Family team, too. So Larry and Tom will be speaking with Larry Flaxman tonight. And that is at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. And you can find it at paracomradio.com, paracomradio.com. All right, I think we got everything in there. So what do you say? Let's do some mailbag now, shall we?
Sounds good. And I'm afraid of this first question, to be honest. I am not sure of my answer. So here we go. First question. Do you feel that a near-death experience can lead to psychic ability? You know, I'm not psychic. I've never heard you say you are. Are you?
No.
Okay. Me
no,
either.
I am not.
Okay. So we agree on that. So it's hard to answer that question, but I will say that I've read literature and I've heard anecdotal stories of people who have said that has happened to them. That's about the only answer I can really give there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am not psychic. I have learned, and I'm sure I would think you would agree with this too, over the years of doing what we do, though. And if you talk to a psychic, they will say that is a psychic ability that we've learned to tap into it. But I can go into a location and I can get like a gut feeling when I walk into a room, or if I walk into an area, I just kind of get this feeling, and I've learned to trust that feeling. But by no means do I think I'm psychic because of that.
Right. I think we all have a certain level of intuition.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. But I'm with you, Chris. I've read a lot of literature on people who have had near-death experiences and have come back and claim to be able to, speak with spirits after that. But right. I have no personal experience on it at all, nor do I have any type of education or training in it either.
I'm with you. I have no frame of reference there. So we'll have to stay on the fence for that one. Good question, though.
Very good question.
Okay, this one will be a little bit easier for us. What sort of household conditions can contribute to false claims of paranormal activity? That one's good.
That's a good one.
You know, I'm just going to throw this one out there because this one isn't mentioned a lot, but slanted floors can really throw off people's perceptions to the point that they're a little paranoid and dizzy, and I believe they can even, lend to hallucinations and things like that. Mm. Something that actually had to be pointed out to me. I mean, we all understand that high EMF fields, of course, chemical vapors, molds, things like that, but slanted floors. Do you have any unique ones that...
Well, actually, I think it's so weird, and maybe we are psychic and we're tapping into each other here, because I find it so weird that you brought up slanted floors, because when I was younger I'd work during the summers in school, one of the places I worked here is a local tourist attraction in Tulsa called the Haunted Depot. It's supposed to be a haunted train station, and I was a tour guide and an actor and everything in it, and loved it. Loved that place. Loved working there. Loved going to it when I was a kid. One of the rooms in it is called the Mystery Room, and it is meant to mess with people's sense of balance, their sense of sight, and just their overall feeling while they're in the room, and it is done by having a slanted floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We are brain connected.
Don't go too deep into mine. You won't find much. But
interesting, though, because that right there lends some legitimacy to why we need to check for those slanted floors.
Mm-hmm. That's a great, great point. Especially, and let's even pull it back even more basic than that. And I know this because of being on an investigation with the team one night. One of the claims was in the kids' room, the ball would roll by itself. It would just roll across the room. So we set up an experiment. We set up the ball, and sure enough, we caught it on camera where it moved a bit, and we thought that was pretty cool. But we had to keep digging further, and we actually brought a level out and saw that the floor was uneven. And that just right there took out any credibility of a ball moving on its own. Well, of course it's going to. Any type of vibration in the house could set that ball, push that ball forward enough just to make it roll on a slanted floor.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah, definitely something people need to consider, those slanted floors.
Yeah. And so that's a great point. I mean, fantastic point. Because, see, I was thinking more, like you said, we talk about high EMFs and how we know how that can make people feel and stuff. But even to me, certain chemicals, we've been in homes where a very small bathroom, we opened up the underneath of the sink and it's just loaded with cleaning chemicals beyond belief that just kind of give off a fume. That's where my mind went first. I think you got to be watch out for that stuff too.
Absolutely. And not only just to explain the haunting, but the safety of your team when you're dealing with chemicals, too. In garages, when people have all kinds of chemicals, sometimes chemicals they shouldn't have in their garages, it's a safety issue for everybody involved. So it's definitely good to become aware through the homeowner, about what's out there.
Right. I see Cormac, our producer, he never gets on the mic during the show, but he types to us. Dodgy heating. Now, I'm assuming that's in Irish. Dodgy means maybe like bad.
Dodgy.
Dodgy heating. Is that? Yes. He's okay. Yes. Dodgy heating, like bad heating. I could see that too. I mean, maybe your filters aren't clean. And you're putting bad air through your ventilation system.
Especially, depending upon what type of heating you have, you know, if you have oil heating or gas, or if you're leaking fumes back into your home, if it's not electric heat, you may be having some type of carbon monoxide flooding in the house,
right.
Which is deadly. So,
yeah. And Cormick also says too, the groaning that they can make, and that would be like kind of the old water heater type heaters, you know, that really kind of got to warm themselves up before they get going. I mean, that they can make noises too that people will think it's maybe caused by a voice, or it's actually just, you know, the furnace or the heater cranking up.
Good point. Absolutely.
So
that's a good
very
question.
Good question. If people want to submit questions to Mailbag, where is the best place for them to do that?
If they would like to submit mailbag questions, they can, of course, go to our Facebook page, and submit them that way, or they can send them to me an email. They can do that by emailing tfradiochris@gmail.com. That's K-R-I-S, tfradiochris@gmail.com.
Excellent. I'd even say too, if you'd like your, even if just your first name, if you want to submit your first name with the question and give us the okay to say, hey, you know, Stacy from Baton Rouge asked this, let us know. We'd be more than happy to give a little shout out to you too.
Absolutely. Because I won't do it unless they give me permission. That's the thing. I will not say their name.
Correct. Exactly. We got to have that okay. Real quick, we want to remind people, if you want to join us on Facebook, we would love for you to join us on Facebook. Our Taps Family Radio page is updated all the time. You just go to Facebook.com and, of course, type in Taps Family Radio. Now, be careful because there's a couple fan pages out there about Taps Family Radio. Just make sure you click on the one that has like almost 2,000 people liking it, and that's our page. So you'll find it on there, and you'll know it's ours too because you'll see it's updated regularly and you'll see us talking on it. So feel free to find us on Facebook. We also Twitter. I hear we Twitter.
We tweet. We
do. I don't tweet. I'm not a tweeter myself. Are you?
I really don't like Twitter. I have to say it, but I do tweet sometimes out of necessity. I can't believe I said that. That's embarrassing, but you know, unfortunately it is a good way to reach a lot of people. So, you know, every now and then I'll tweet. I don't like to though.
But I'll tell you what, and I think I'm going to have to force myself to get into Twitter more because it seems as MySpace was one day and then Facebook came in and kicked the crap out of MySpace, I think eventually it seems like more and more people are going to go to the Twitter thing because it really just allows you to throw out your comment out there and not have to worry about getting farm fill requests on Twitter.
That's driving me crazy. So, yeah, I can embrace that idea entirely, not
right,
have to be spammed.
So I think eventually Twitter's going to become that thing next. So I think I'm going to have to get ready for it. Cormick says that Twitter on the iPhone app is the new chat room. Okay, so you can get Twitter with the iPhone app. So that's very cool.
He really did put everything necessary into those apps. I sincerely hope people check him out. I was way impressed with the Android test app.
Oh, very cool. So there we go. We got one positive feedback on the Droid test app. So that's awesome. So find us on Twitter, too, because that is updated daily as well from our wonderful tech team. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and, of course, our main page, tapsfamilyradio.net, where you can now download our apps we were just talking about for the iPhone and the Droid. And also, if you just want to listen to all of the podcasts right there on the page, you can. So we've got it all. We are trying to make sure we are reaching out to our listeners in every way possible.
Oh, there's no excuse anymore. We are going to need a letter from your mother if you miss our show, because really, I mean, there's just so many different ways to reach us now and so many ways to hear the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will be live again in 2 weeks. But until then, you can listen to all of our podcasts, or if you download the app and we're not on or you're not listening to one of our podcasts, you can enjoy all the other great radios on Jackalope Radio, the home for Taps Family Radio. Keep watching Facebook and Twitter and our main page to find out who our guest is going to be in 2 weeks. Guaranteed, it's going to be another big name in the field of the paranormal. So on behalf of Chris and myself, Tim, we thank you all for being out there and listening to us, because without you guys out there, we couldn't do what we do. So we're signing off for another night from Taps Family Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to Taps Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for Taps Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.